Hello! No, this is not Jay Hunter. This is indie wrestling ring announcer Vince Barry with a special offer for OSW Review listeners from Finnish Fightwear. Visit their website, osw.finishfightwear.com, to save $5 on their new t-shirt. That's osw.finishfightwear.com. Welcome to OSW Review. This isn't old school though.
Ah, that happened yesterday. Day before yesterday, wasn't it? That's old.
Well, we have been seeing the same matches for 7 years, though.
So. That's true. Old matches.
Anyway, if you have any ideas what we could call us doing modern reviews, if they are posted in the comments. It's Hell in a Cell 2014, and it's coming up right now. Oh, hey Steve, how's it going, mate?
Not bad, Jay, how are you?
Pretty awesome. Conspicuous by his absence, Mr. OC, still in America.
Oh, fucking sneak off.
But he will join us for the happening next time. Before we start, we've been getting shit about how we pronounce our ORs, like J-OR or VD.
Yeah, why?
It's like, how are we supposed to pronounce it? It's like,
R?
J-R? RVD?
I understand people being annoyed by how we say H, but we're saying that right, because everyone else gets it wrong, because it's not H, it's H.
Passes the bloody ammo, would you? We have our final run of ECW-style t-shirts available. If you want one, please pick one up before they're sold out. Yeah, we won't reprint them. We don't want to be stuck with boxes full of t-shirts.
No, absolutely not.
Just giving them away for birthdays and Christmas for the next 10 years. T-shirt.oswreview.com. The next proper OSW reviews are the happening and our two tattoo reviews. We have to stop tattoos for reviews because we really want to start a new storyline.
Yes. And I don't want to do another ECW show ever.
You hear that, Simon? You still have time to change your mind.
Fucking hell, man.
Oh, with that said, or speaking of hell, fuck it.
Buckle up, Teddy.
I truly feel sorry for all of you people because, yes, tonight will feel like a rerun. But lucky for all of you, it's starring me.
On the pre-show, we saw a Mizdow TV segment with The Miz. Tease a tiny bit of dissension with Damo, rightly taking credit for beating Shamo on Raw, but they sincerely call each other friends and hug. Then a pre-recorded Shamo interrupts on the Titantron and Bro kicks the camera.
Oh, so bad. He missed the camera by a mile, and then, you know, when a real camera breaks, it just goes to black, right? You don't get the fucking fuzzy lines and the Blair fucking witch crap like that. Like, so it was too fake. It was silly.
Poor Christian. Can't even get on the pre-show.
10 times the wrestler of most people on this roster. Also a better promo than most people. However, looks worse. He's a bit skinny, he's a bit orange.
And he'd need a big blue dot on him.
Big blue dot on his face.
Also, we got Bo Dallas versus Mark Henry. Bo says, for beating Mark Henry 4 times, he's the new world's strongest man, but gets flattened in a 36-second squash. Yeah, shame he's a prelim act. Like, he is a solid mid-card comedy gimmick.
Mm.
You know?
Fuck. It begins.
It's Hell in a Cell, October 26, 2014, from the American Airlines Center in Dallas, Texas. In front of a sellout, 15,303, commentators tonight are Michael Cole with JBL and Jerry Lawler phoning it in. We have Pyro.
And Ballyhoo. Did you see JBL's big fake smile? He just has this, like, fucking stupid plastic smile on his face. It doesn't budge. And then when he goes to say something, it's like his face completely changes. Terrible.
Okay. Yeah, he's not happy to be there, if that's
no,
what
you mean.
No. What's with the using the Raw set? It's basically the Raw set they're using.
And the SmackDown set.
Yeah.
Main event set, yeah. You gotta cut out them dollars, Jake.
Jeez. It's like you're already watching 5 hours of TV and it's just another 3 hours of TV. Pay-per-view theme song is Panic Room by Theory of a Dead Man. We need to update the five bands of Doom.
It's like, when I went to Santa Monica.
It's like Kevin Rudolph, Sifos, Theory of a Dead Man.
Oh, God.
C'est vrai, hey. C'est un miracle. C'est vrai, hey. C'est un miracle. C'est vrai.
First up, it's champion Dolph Ziggler versus Cesaro in a 2 out of 3 falls match for the Intercontinental title. 2 out of 3 falls, you say? Because they traded wins on TV beforehand.
So let's trade more.
Exactly. They only announced it midway through the go-home SmackDown. 2 out of 3 falls of a title match is more commonly seen with tag title matches back in the 80s.
Yes.
You ask, what is the greatest 2 out of 3 falls match of all time? It was June 21st, 1993. It was OC versus Jay or Marty Jannetty versus Dyke Bra.
Yes. Marty Jannetty, of course. He's one of the greatest wrestlers of all time.
So it's the Battle of the Doghouse, as Ziggler's been on a getting pinned clean streak since Night of Champions, losing to Rusev, Orton, Rollins and Cesaro, finally beating him on Raw. Whilst last week Cesaro, in an interview with Liverpool Echo, promoting the upcoming UK tour, said, "I'm sick of seeing John Cena against Randy Orton for the 500th time."
He's correct, but very stupid. Guess who's losing clean?
Where's Dolph's stunt double or truth, you say? He's healthy, but for some reason he's been taken off Raw and SmackDown. He's still working main event. WWE are having none of Ziggler, please. Kick off, we get a dub spot, trading countering near falls. After taking a giant swing, Ziggler counters a pin with one of his own and gets the first fall after 3:33.
There was a lot of headlocks. A lot.
Cesaro takes control. Following a Barrett's Rope elbow miss, Cesaro hits a double underhook into Powerbomb, and the lads do a try-too-hard power sequence. This whole thing takes about 2 minutes. Dolph does his Lemistica into armbar shtick, and it's counter-countered into a standing guillotine, which is pretty cool, where Cesaro holds Ziggler, and they help each other get up onto Barrett's Rope, and they do a superplex. It was very impressive, like the strength and stamina of Cesaro, but it was really slow and kayfabe shattering.
It looked so fake. It was like, here, help me do this move. God damn it. The whole point is to make it look like you're not helping.
We spent all day practicing it.
Yeah.
We get an awesome, very European pop-up uppercut near a fall, followed by horrific elbow misses. It was just sunny level, you know?
Yeah.
So the finish sees Ziggler escapes the Gotch neutralizer with a triple hit combo, an elbow stunner, a super kick, and a zigzag, getting the rare 2-0 win in 12:15. I thought it was quite enjoyable, but forgettable. Like, they tried a couple of sequences. They weren't the smoothest, but they weren't botched. I was a bit disappointed. Like, both men together are capable of having an absolute blinder.
Absolutely.
So even though they wrestle each other constantly on TV, I'm actually up for seeing them wrestle again on pay-per-view. Yeah, 12 minutes is not enough for a 2 out of 3 falls match.
No, it's not. They'd have been better off just having a match and not having the 3 falls and it being a single fall 12 and a half minute match. It would have been a better opener and then you could build up as opposed to short build, take a break, short build, take a break, you know?
Because there was a minute's rest between the falls. So obviously losing 2-0 is punishment for Cesaro opening his mouth. Flapping his gums. What do you think?
I thought it was all right. Ziggler's great at the moves. He's just too quick in there. He can't follow his matches, you know? He doesn't sell for the right amount of time. He doesn't set up for the right amount of time. It's like he's in a race to get to the next move. It's a mid-card match. That's it. Move on. Like, It was fine. It was fine.
Who's that comedian he was dating?
Amy Schumer. She's fucking hilarious.
Did you hear why she broke up with him? It's because he was too athletic in bed.
That's correct.
It's too high a work rate. And she was knackered.
That's right. He just blew through all the spots and she was bored.
On Raw, Jigglypuff rolled up Kane for another win, while Cesaro's match never got started.
Jigglypuff.
Ooh, recently deceased Ultimate Warrior's final promo audio is used to hawk the WWE Network. The commentators insult the $55 paying audience.
I don't get this. You do understand that not everyone has the opportunity to get the network for a tenner. There are entire countries, including our own, which it's not available in.
And England.
And England, which is probably their second, maybe third biggest market. Are they fucking stupid?
Also,
yes, they are. Yes, yeah. Yes, they are.
Also, every pay-per-view buy, they get about $25, $30 out of it. And the network, you get about $8, $9 per month.
Yeah. You're so stupid. Oh my God. Primo!
Next up, it's Bella in a Cellar.
That's a good name, actually.
Pollock again. Brie versus Nikki Bella. Oh my God, did you hear Brie's theme song?
Primo!
Primo!
Right, let's. Isn't Brie mode in kayfabe as described on Total Divas when she gets moldy drunk and she's just off her face? In bits, making a tit out of herself. So they've turned this into a positive gimmick?
It's the real Brie Bella. The following contest, scheduled for one fall, has an agreed-upon stipulation where the loser becomes the winner's personal assistant for 30 days.
Didn't they say bitch once and then took that out of the build-up?
Mm. Heel Nikki has tiny pants. 5 stars. Brie's wearing far more clothes than Nikki, so wouldn't they be more likely to cheer Nikki then? And she also does Brian's yes chant.
I hate that gimmick.
A big fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck you to anyone who isn't Daniel Bryan using the yes chant. Could you imagine, alright, if Deborah came out doing the fingers and the Austin head shake, or fucking Sarah came around with the Taker pose and the hat?
Not Sarah McMinger.
Could you? There'd be murder.
Yeah, absolutely. And like the worst thing about it is that you know that Vince is going to spin this into saying Daniel Bryan's not really over. It's the chant that's over, as proven by the fact that Brie Bella can do it, and the chant takes on. Like
Steve, your favorite. Serious blood feud kicks off with a collar and elbow tie-up.
Oh, yeah.
The fans immediately check out of this with JBL chants. To be fair, they wrestled a competent women's match and far above my expectations.
Brie is actually not bad. Unless she's asked to act and scream in the back of a car for 11 minutes straight.
Nikki hits Abyss's shock treatment, the rack attack.
It's a good name.
And a big Nigel forearm. Fixes her tits, another rack attack, and gets the clean 3 in 6:21. So the fans cheer as heel Nikki does the yes chant.
Her tits by the end of this match were amazing. They're all like pushed up and hanging out. I was like, yeah, love it. 5 stars.
So better than expected, but it's still win
this
match.
I couldn't care less. I've no interest in the feud. I've no interest in either talent, and I don't care where it goes. This is skip every show for me.
Oh, I'll tell you where it went. Nikki beat Naomi on Raw with a rack attack and without Brie's help. That's all.
Hold on. Why would Nikki need Brie's help?
I know. You're my personal assistant.
Oh, yeah.
You gotta help me out in the heel antics. No, she just beat her clean.
Okay.
Nice fucking storyline booking there, mate.
Gonna take you back to the past.
to play the shitty games that suck ass he'd rather have.
It's tag champions Gold Hyphen and Star Hyphen Dust defending against Jimmy and Jay, the Usos. So it's a return match from last month's Night of Champions. Of note, the Dust Brothers have not won on TV since. Also, Cena and Ambrose flattened both the Usos and Dusty's kids on Raw. So, state of your tag division, mate.
This opened the show last month, right? And we loved this match.
Yeah, it was
last
good. Month. Yeah, it was very good.
I've since seen this so many times that I couldn't care less. This could have been the best match ever, and I would have said meh.
Yeah, literally, 8 times. Steve, tell me all you know about the Usos characters.
They're twins. They like to paint their face. They have a haka at the start. And I'm stalling.
They're all physical attributes, Steve.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with
yeah.
I have they're nice guys who don't talk.
Yeah.
The Nile.
So you don't rub your heart.
Stardust has added blue to his attire while the Usos are dressed as cancer awareness. Steve! What bar are the Usos?
Well, Jay, the Usos are wearing a lovely pink and white getup, so they are a Nuga bar.
Lovely. They're also the Eliminators.
Oh, John Cronus.
Cronus.
Needs more Cronus.
I have to say, I actually turned a corner on accepting Cody as Stardust. I thought he's been pretty cool lately.
Like, I still think it's better than being Cody.
That's true. Rather than Goldust, I'll actually say he's more like Jim Carrey's Riddler in Batman 3. And even posts riddles on Twitter. So
does he?
Mm.
Nice.
For you at home, can you think of a proper tag name for Goldust and Stardust? Like something dust. Like one or two syllables, dust. Post below. I've got nothing. Well, I got Cosmic Dust. Referee Rudy Charles from TNA has a noticeably slow but consistent count. The Usos hit big stereo top rope superplexes and splashes but can't get the win. Cody gives Jimmy a cheeky toe up the hole and Goldust hits his final cut, which is a swinging vertical suplex, 4-3 at 10:21 for a successful tag retention. I thought this toe up the hole, I wouldn't call it a heel action. It's just something smart that got them to win. Not as good as last month, noticeably less hate from the crowd, but both are very smooth tag teams, so it's enjoyable as always. See you for every Raw and SmackDown for next month.
It was a good match, but I just can't get into it. I've seen it a million times. Move on. Fucking Usos have been stuck in these really long feuds. It's like, didn't they face the Wyatts for months? And then they go on to face the fucking Dust Brothers for months.
Triple dread.
Oh, God.
Here you go. Give them a round of applause.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is 20 feet tall. It weighs 5 tons. The menacing, malignant Hell in a Cell.
Oh, that's so many Susan G. Komen ads this pay-per-view.
Have we had a go at this yet?
No.
Like, obviously, breast cancer is awful and it kills a lot of women. But this is a sham. It's a fucking disgrace.
So, as you can see here, there are pink ropes. What better colour scheme to expand Hell in a Cell than pink and white ropes? It's because WWE are in a month-long co-branding business venture with Susan G. Komen for the Cure, a breast cancer awareness group, aka a scam artist that only gives 21% of their money towards detection and research, you know, despite For the Cure being in
detection.
Their name.
Detection?
Like screening mammograms.
I don't know.
I won't belabor the point, but they can fuck right off.
Yeah.
Their CEO, Nancy Brinker, earns more than other CEOs of companies 10 times their size. And they've taken legal action to over 100 charities and non-profits over their brand.
What?
Anyone using the words For the Cure or using the word cure and the colour pink.
No, fucking way.
Yeah?
Fucking hell. They're suing charities.
Yeah.
I'm so angry.
Like, I'm very happy WWE are doing something with breast cancer awareness, but do you have to go with fucking scumbags?
You don't have to go with anyone. You can just say regular breast checks. If you find anything, go to your doctor. That is all the education that women need to know. Check your breasts regularly, and if you find anything, go to the doctor. It's such a shame. It's like profiting off this is... It's the lowest of the low.
You're saying you're for the cure, but you're only spending 20% of your donations on that. You're a marketing group.
They're a slogan and a marketing
awareness
group.
Of it. And which is promoting your own brand.
Fucking important. But, like, that's what Breast Cancer Awareness Month is for. You don't need to add Susan Komen to the, you know, the reams of info out there, like.
Yeah, so if you want to donate to a charity, I recommend Breast Cancer Research Foundation or the Cancer Research Institute. So you give to a research facility and not a fucking advertising campaign scam.
Even the one over here, the Mary Keating one, is a Ronan Keating's mom passed away from breast cancer, but even that is not great. Just give it to the research centres. It's the best way to fucking go. There's some incredibly smart people out there dedicating their lives to figuring this shit out, not some woman who wants to make money off t-shirts. Buy her t-shirt.
Credibility. So, the gimmick of Hell in a Cell 2014, it's a double main event, aka no main event. So we get the first of our no main events next. It's Hell in a Cell, John Cena versus Randy Orton.
How can anyone possibly be interested in this match?
If you started watching wrestling last month.
Okay, yeah.
That's all I have. Since 2007, Cena and Orton have been in the ring on TV together 82 times, 20 of which was simply Cena versus Orton, 10 on TV and 10 on pay-per-view. They've feuded just hardcore 07 to 2010 and then resumed in December 2013 and been on and off since.
And at what point did they have the match where the stip was, is it the last match you'll ever see between these two guys?
2009, I think.
It's the most overplayed feud that you can think of.
Yes.
Like, I...
Well, the Usos and... Why is this happening, you ask? Lazy build, that's why. A match of convenience. Since Orton has nothing going on, he asked to wrestle the loser of Ambrose versus Cena. Ambrose won the right to wrestle Rollins in a contract and a pole match. And loser Cena and afterthought Randy are rewarded with their match being a number one contendership to face the absentee champion Brock Lesnar.
Is that not a huge slap in the fucking face to Rollins and Ambrose? Why is the loser match between losers getting the title shot? Because fuck you, Britain, and the rest of the world.
Oh, also of note, Orton was curb stomped on Raw last week after weeks of dissension slash jealousy towards Seth Rollins and brushed it off on the pay-per-view with Rollins better stay out of my business.
They're absolutely building up Randy to a face turn. You can spot it a mile off. He's not a face. He will turn face, he'll be hot for about 2 weeks and then the fans will realise he's boring and bland and can't cut a face promo, can't command a fucking crowd.
Just because he'll be the exact same character.
Yes. He will change his wrestling slightly. He will wrestle at a slightly increased tempo, less headlocks, but his promos and character will be the same.
Ooh, six headlocks.
Six.
Orton's entrance lasts 2 minutes, 10 seconds.
Oh my god. You know, watching this entrance, and I got talking to my friends about Orton's Mania entrance when they had the band play his song live, and it was fucking woeful. And you can see like Randy Orton like walking out pissed off because it was like, this band can't perform this song live. That was one of the worst performances, you know, since the fucking
DX band. Did Star Spangled Banner WrestleMania 14.
Oh, say, can you?
It's freedom of expression.
You know, the US Army, you know, they get the biggest pop in the world whenever they're mentioned on wrestling. Could you turn the troops heel by saying, it is thanks to the troops doing what they do that this band can perform at WrestleMania? Yeah, fuck you, troops. Too much freedom there.
Oh, shortcut. Time from the first strike of the match to leaving the ring?
90 seconds.
25 seconds. Cena does a shoulder block, runs ropes, and we get a lovely RKO out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere!
As a kick out. I'm glad they're seem to be capitalizing on the RKO vines.
Honestly, I think it's already done. Like, I think it came and it passed. It was hilarious. I had a great laugh. I think it's done.
I wish he'd just spend one Raw RKOing everyone out of nowhere.
That'd be great.
Like, with 12 RKOs.
That's what they did with Austin. Like, how many people did Austin hit that fucking stunner to? Yeah, you just really have to literally hit it out of nowhere. Always.
This match doesn't have a story. Well, rather the same story as current WWE main events all have that don't feature Brock Lesnar, which is kick out of each other's finishers all the time, every time, until your finisher is just a signature move and one of them will get the pin eventually. I miss the 80s, because back in the 80s, a match was decided on who can hit their finisher first. If you lose the match, shit, you got hit with it. There's no shame in losing to it.
I just wish there was one or two moves that no one ever kicked out of. Like Rusev's camel clutch. No one ever breaks out of it. That is a rule now. And pick one other move. Pick a face. And say, no one's ever going to break out of the yes lock or something like that, you know? These are the two moves. They're going to be over for the rest of the time. That's it.
Like, finishing moves, being finishers, is a powerful tool. Like, that's why, you ever wonder when Jake does the short arm clothesline and motions for the DDT, the woohoo! Like, the crowd go fucking mental.
Yeah.
Because they know if he hits that, it's the end of the match.
Yeah.
And that's it. But they're just using the X7 booking, kick out of your finishers. So, we got two RKOs and then kick out of two AAs, you kick out of them. Oh, there was an AA into RKO counter, which was nice.
Seen it loads of times before, though.
Another AA gets a two count, and we get to see John Cena's big flapping hands like a goalkeeper. Do you know he says he loves video games, but he can't play them because his hands are too big?
It's really?
Yeah. He needs like a special controller.
He needs to get the old Xbox with the with the fucking Duke. Yeah.
Or get an arcade stick instead.
Yeah.
RKO wants a super RKO through a table, but Cena counters and delivers a top rope FU, and god fucking damn it, gets the 3 in 25:57 and is once again the number one contender. So Cena's winning this feud with a record of 12-7-1. He celebrates as Paul Heyman looks on.
I don't care. This match was absolutely nothing to me. It was just wasting time. And the end was the kind of old school Cena booking, like Orton was battering him for the last couple of minutes and beep, 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 out of nowhere, AA and win. Fucking flashback to the, like, 2008, 2009 Cena, which was the worst. He's gotten so much better since back in those days. Like, although I'm glad that it's Cena Brock, because I really wouldn't want to see Orton Brock.
That is my number one wanted match.
Really?
Is Orton Brock, because Orton can't have his lazy autopilot match. He's going to get kicked around by Brock Lesnar.
When you put it that way, that's actually fun.
Stroppy cunt gets battered.
Yeah. Stupid!
Try it.
Yeah.
Drop you on your neck.
Yeah. I like that, Jay. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was the one saving grace of the match, is that I wanted Orton to win, and we'll get to see Brock Orton. And that's taken away from us. There's not much this match could have done to jolt me out of apathy. Like, I didn't care to begin with.
Nothing.
And like, it maybe, didn't do anything.
So. Maybe if it was a bloodbath. But we don't have those matches anymore, you know?
Contest is scheduled for one fall, making its way to the ring from Dublin, Ireland, weighing in at 272 pounds, Sheamus!
Conas a Tatu, Sheamus a Sanam Dum, far more Rua, a Will on the Heron.
Next up, it's the WWE United States Championship match. It's Sheamus, the champion, versus The Miz. So we see the fully interchangeable mid-card, Night of Champions last month, with Ziggler, Miz, and Sheamus Cesaro. This month, Ziggler, Cesaro, and Sheamus Miz. Having hot potatoed the belt with Ziggler and coming up short, Miz tries his hand at the other mid-card belt. Speaking of potatoes, we saw Sandow dressed up as Sheamus on WWE Main Event.
He looked more like Beaker. Didn't he? He really did.
Who is Sheamus?
Basically, yeah.
WWE are fully aware Sandow is the draw of Miz's matches.
He's so great.
The camera and the commentators just focus on him on the outside and his antics. He mimics taking the 10 forearm clubs, putting on a headlock, and he sells every move.
Awesome.
It's magic.
It's my favourite act currently in wrestling. It's probably the only thing that I actually like in wrestling currently, and that's sad. The only thing that I really like is a mid-card comedy angle. Holy God. But yeah, he's fucking amazing at it. He's 10 times better than me at being The Miz than The Miz is.
Poor Miz. Like, this Hollywood douchebag gimmick is his best gimmick.
Yeah.
So far, and he's immediately overshadowed
Yeah.
The crowd appreciate Mizdow as well, as they get a Mizdow's awesome chant.
Good.
So we get a distraction skull-crushing finale, but it can't finish Sheamus. Then we get the top rope nothing. What does Miz do off the top rope? What has he ever done off the top rope?
Nothing.
And it's countered by a brogue kick, and Sheamus retains an 8-18. Afterwards, Sheamus tests out Miz's stunt double actions. That was actually hilarious.
This was great. This was awesome.
Like, he'd pick up Miz's limp arm, and Sandow's arm would go up as well. He'd shake it, and it ends up he picks up Miz, and they do the YMCA, and Mizdow does it as well, and then he ends it with another bro kick, and everyone loved it.
Loved it. The crowd were laughing. I was laughing.
Yeah.
The people that I was watching the show with were laughing. This was a hit.
Yeah, a nothing match. The whole bout is just watching Sandow do what he does best.
Yeah.
I don't know why we needed this, as they were on the pre-show as well. Like, do one or the other, you know?
They're just over. They're doing what they do, and they're currently in the process of running it into the ground.
Yeah.
Give it another 3 weeks before we all start to say that we hate it.
The other thing is, I feel bad about Miz is Triple H. There was a backstage segment a couple of weeks ago on Raw. Triple H literally called him comic relief and threatened to put Miz's straight-to-DVD career straight in the toilet.
Fucking cheek of you, mate.
And a few weeks later, you're going to ask us to buy fucking Marine 4.
Marine 4, yeah. And Bad Chaperone 2.
On Raw, the Usos defeat Jobber Miz and Mizdow with twin magic. See, the Bellas don't need that anymore. Focus being on Sandow again.
Twin magic with Miz and Sandow? That's a brilliant gimmick. They don't look anything alike. It's genius.
They should do that.
I know that last month I was giving out saying that Sandow should shave his beard, but I was like, maybe not. Because the fact that they're not the same just adds to the comedy, like.
Yeah.
Lana!
What? Danger zone.
Danger zone.
Next up, it's Big Show versus Rusev. With Mark Henry losing repeatedly, doing a heel turn on main event, he told the fans to fuck off for not appreciating him and his losing efforts, and then say no more about it. That was completely dropped, he still face. It's Big Show's turn to try defeat Rusev. Show also pulled down Rusev's massive Russian flag. Nobody was upset, but WWE issued an apology anyway to try garner some attention. It's pretty pathetic.
It was really bad fake fucking apology.
Then Rusev motioned to do the same with an American flag, and a plant soldier, not the happening soldier who is a plant, decides to intervene and got a super kick for his trouble. The promo package with the Big Show loving the troops, I thought it was actually very well done.
Big Show's a good actor, man. Like, he plays his part well.
And the Texans replied with USA chant, so yeah, good stuff. Lana's in shiny breast cancer awareness pink. I think she looks like a prostitute.
Yeah, she's still beautiful and all, but yeah, it's definitely cheapening, like.
Definitely lunchtime in my jammies, going down to the chipper. Get rid
chipper for my lunch in my jammies. I like that.
Okay, start the match. Rusev repeatedly works the leg, which is beneficial in both work and shoot. Because in work, he's taking away the giant's vertical base. Very smart. And in shoot, Big Show gets to lie down.
Yes.
The hero of the Russian Federation does an impressive suplex to Show and goes straight back to working the leg, killing the impact of a really impressive spot. It was literally just another move. Ooh, Big Show applies AJ Styles' calf killer. Nice. A move he can apply while lying down.
Yeah, you can actually lie on your back while doing it. It's amazing.
And then Mark Henry comes to ringside. Going into the match, everyone greatly expected a heel turn. Obviously, they had the stop-start heel turn on main event. And before the bout, Big Show said that he was going to beat Rusev for himself, the fans, and he's going to beat him for you, Mark Henry. And Mark was like, oh. He gave him an indignant look when he said
it. Well, not fairness. Like, hasn't Mark Henry lost him like 3 times straight?
And isn't Bo jobbing you out?
4 times in a row, mate.
So just when he comes down, it's like, are you accidentally on purpose going to cost Big Show the match or turn heel afterwards? Neither, actually. Show goes out much like Henry did last month. 2 Sambo super kicks and an accolade later seals the win for the rascally Russian in 7:54. Mark Henry picks up Show afterwards and nothing. He just, you know, helps him up.
Swerve.
The swerve is, there is no swerve.
Yeah.
So, what do you think?
It was alright. I enjoy Rusev. I think he's very over. I think Lan is a great part of his act. I don't think he's a great wrestler. I think he's decent enough. Like,
definitely improved since when he started as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that this match was better than his ones against Mark Henry, but it didn't have the awesome ending with the single tear. I said, they're so salty.
We got the official turn the next night on Raw, where Mark Henry officially turned heel by World's Strongest slamming his teammate Big Show, allowing the Dust Brothers to get the win. Oh, fuck off with the impending Mark Henry versus Big Show match.
You're going to pay for this match. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's weird that they saved the heel turn for Raw the next night and not on the pay-per-view.
I honestly think it was just a swerve. I think most people knew it was coming. Like, it's been signposted for weeks. I honestly think that they just did it, that they didn't do the turn because they thought people expected a turn.
It's not like RVD's contract ran out at like Extreme Rules 2008 and he's facing RVD, but haha, let's have him win at the pay-per-view. And then job made the next night on Raw.
Or Hulk Hogan burning the Observer on a WCW show saying, Macho Man's arm is an injured brother. And then Macho Man comes out and he's wearing a cast on his arm. Oh my God.
And further injures his arm wrestling.
Yeah. Get up and do way more damage. Fucking hell, man.
Man, there are so...
They call the fans marks. Is there anything more marky than that? I'm going to injure myself to prove a point about how you're wrong despite being right.
So they're marks for smarks.
You know something, brother? Observe this, brother. This is what we call a rag sheet, brother.
Next up, it's the WWE Divas Championship. It's the champion AJ Lee versus Paige. More lesbian pollen. Because there's something in the air making every female wrestler part lesbian.
Mind games.
Mind games. Steve, top 10 lesbian pollen gimmicks. So I have a top 10 list here.
Excellent.
It's thanks to our bra Carly who ranked this list for us.
Number 10.
Marlena sexually harasses Sable as part of the Goldust Mark Mero feud. It was never shown on TV, so it only garners number 10.
Okay.
Number 9.
Sable and Tori Wilson's gay for pay lesbian antics / kissing to promote their Playboy magazine.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. Disappointing magazine. Pointing.
Well, Playboy in itself is disappointing because they're all airbrushed to shit.
I don't mind it. It's not about being dirty. It's about seeing beautiful women look their best.
Number 8.
Mickey James wears the face off Melina.
Don't remember that.
Mind games. 2007 Survivor Series, causing her own distraction for the pin.
Number 7.
Winter and Angelina Love.
Oh my god, the fucking drugs in the cup and the mirror and shit. Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
From TNA, obviously.
Or WCW.
October 2010, classic Russo. Katie Lee, not Dirty Lee, debuted in TNA in a mirror that only Angelina Love could see her. Not only did we get the stereotypical lesbian overtones, but an awesome voodoo mind control. And the two got the TNA women's tag belts.
I can't believe those belts existed, but what an amazing angle.
Hey, oh, that's one of your favourite angles, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's one of my favourite ones to slag.
Winter was claiming that she had a spell on Angelina, but it was actually she put drugs in her coffee or something to do such.
Number 6.
Bischoff's HLA lesbians with Stephanie McMahon, obviously. Circa Unforgiven 2002, Bischoff's trying to coax her with hot lesbian action. Ended in a Big Mama Rikishi in drag, stink faces Bischoff.
Jesus Christ, that was the dark days of Raw. The dark, dark days.
Number 5.
Layla in general being a big perv. Taking opportunity whilst pinning Beth Phoenix to grab and caress her breast.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, she's a whoop. Oh yeah, splicey, splicey.
Excellent.
Number 4.
ECW's Beulah and Kimona, which Brucey bonus points, includes a fake pregnancy angle.
Nice.
Beulah said she was pregnant with Tommy Dreamer's baby, and Raven ditched her for Kimona. Later, she revealed that she wasn't pregnant, but rather she'd been cheating on both Raven and Tommy Dreamer with Kimona. This led to a three-way kiss with Tommy Dreamer. I'll take them both. I'm hardcore. And went nowhere after that.
Number 3.
AJ versus Paige. So, although poor, it's an actual angle. It's on TV, as opposed to this, all these like one-offs.
Yeah.
Competitive rivalry.
Going for months now. Going nowhere.
And best friends, enemies, dealy. That hasn't materialised at all. An embarrassment considering the talent level of the people involved.
Yeah.
Similarly, Alicia Fox has been pulling a Layla, as well as Rosa Mendez on Total Divas, hitting on Natty.
Oh.
Just like everyone in the division these days.
Yeah.
Part-time lesbians.
Lesbians, crazy, ambitious.
Number 2.
Dawn Marie sexually blackmails Tori Wilson. Despite Tori, Dawn Marie got engaged to Tori's dad, Al Wilson. Dawn said she'd break off the wedding if her and Tori slept together. But
oh, that's his fucking daughter! That's so creepy. That's like Vince. Obviously, Vince had a hand in writing this.
This is my dream.
The baby's mine.
So Dawn Marie and Tori Wilson slept together. But Dawn married Al anyway. And Al ended up dying due to oversexing on their wedding night.
That's right.
Dawn Marie wasn't a lesbian before or after this gimmick, by the way.
And then got sacked while pregnant. Yes.
They brawled at Al Wilson's funeral on SmackDown and had a shitty blow-off match on pay-per-view.
God. Number one.
And number one, the best lesbian angle ever. Mickie James stalks and sexually assaults Trish Stratus.
Awesome. It's the only one that's actually great.
Yeah.
And I fucking loved Mickie James back then. Oh my God.
Carly tells us it's her personal favourite and the best psycho fan lesbo pollen stalker angle they've done, hence why they keep trying to repeat it. Their rematch at Backlash was shaping up to be a belter, and it was a shame Trish got hurt during it. As a Brucey bonus, here's Lita and Trish's kiss of death, no homo, but it made a generation of wrestling fans very happy.
Nice.
So thank you, Carly.
That's very nice of you.
Look who it is. The walking kiss of death. Tell me, whose career do you plan on ending tonight?
Yours.
So, AJ, the champion, out first, versus Paige with Alicia Fox. Steve, why is Alicia Fox allowed at ringside? Gorilla Monsoon clearly stated you cannot be in possession of a wrestler's license and a manager's license.
The rules!
The crowd are silent. It's good that Paige screams periodically. Taking it to the outside, we see a guy in a Randy Orton muscle suit. It's
awesome.
Then someone dressed up as Mankind and an excellent Bray Wyatt. He had the a real beard.
Big ass beard, yeah. Like.
Paige is standing on the barricade. AJ swipes Paige's feet and Paige bumps to the mats outside. And Cole immediately tells us that she totally hit her head, so she's out. Alicia tries to help out Paige by dumping her back in the ring to beat the 10 count. But AJ immediately locks in the Black Widow. The ref's actually in the wrong position to see the instant tap. She has it locked in for a few seconds longer than she should have. A heatless nothing match lasting 6:49, but I thought their smoothest and best offering so far.
Yeah, I didn't care. I've seen this feud been going on for at least 6 months. It's going nowhere. They flipped back and forth so many times. It's time to move both girls on. Like, come on, God's sake. I'd actually argue that this feud has done damage to both girls. They're about lower on the totem pole than they were before the feud kicked off. Like.
Mm. The following night on Raw, we got a rematch from last week's Raw, which was AJ versus Alicia. So AJ pinned her, and the frustrated Paige attacked Fox again. So I wonder if Paige and Fox will feud, and if they do, what'll AJ
fine
do?
Yeah, they'll have a match for a month or two, and then there'll be Paige, AJ again.
Three-way. There we go.
Nice.
And if they do that, that'll be the fifth month in a row AJ and Paige have wrestled.
God. Five fucking... I don't know.
Oh, they'll probably do a traditional Survivor Series, actually. The cast of Total Divas versus the people who weren't on Total Divas.
Against the wrestlers, like.
Yeah.
And, of course, Paige will cause AJ to match, so their feud can continue.
Ooh, it's time for our main event. Mean Gene, play us in. Or Jim Johnson, play us in.
Nice. Now that's fucking Godsmack. Let's take a blast to the moon, baby.
What? It's for charity.
Oh! Oh!
So it's the Hell in a Cell main event. It's Dean Ambrose versus Seth Rollins. When we last left Night of Champions, Rollins tried and failed to cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase on Brock Lesnar. Rollins smartly explained on Raw that he wanted to beat the best being Brock. Heyman accepted it, letting him off the hook with a warning. Rollins' gimmick is that of a scaredy cat heel, doing run-ins and causing DQs for Ambrose and Cena, and then hightailing it when he's overcome. It makes sense, but it really is get through television until the pay-per-view type stuff. Shocking, since pay-per-views are delayed a payoff until next month.
Yep.
Rollins took out Ambrose with a curb stomp on cinder blocks, but he returned at Night of Champions. In reality, he took time off doing a bit part in Lockdown, a WWE film, not the TNA pay-per-view, and has been trying to get his hands on Rollins since, and he got to do it tonight.
Yeah. Right. Do you know those moments where you're watching wrestling with a non-wrestling fan and you're mortified? Well, have you ever had a moment where you're watching a show with another 20 plus year hardcore wrestling fanatic and the both of you are still mortified for each other? The segment was Ambrose came out and he had a bag and he brought out a chair and he put the chair in the middle of the ring and opened the bag and he had a Seth Rollins mannequin and he started talking to the mannequin, telling him what he was going to do to it. And then he got a screwdriver out and was like, oh, I'm going to get out your apple and I'm going to stick it in your ear. And it was embarrassing. I was mortified. It was terrible writing. Seth Rollins comes out and these two guys that are having a blood feud, someone who put a skull through fucking blocks, and they just stand across from each other and have a chat. Like, it's fucking woeful. The build-up fucking damaged the show. Like,
we didn't get to talk about it last month. What do you think of Dean Ambrose?
I think he's doing pretty well. It's just a shame that all promos are written, because he's giving shit and he's turning it into somewhat decent stuff. You know, like, you know, he does have his own character, the kind of wild man, blah, blah, blah. He's doing better than I thought he would, but he doesn't look like a main event or carry the company type of guy to me personally. So we'll have to wait and see. Do you like
him? I like him quite a lot. My favourite of the Shield is Seth Rollins because he's a better wrestler.
I am the very
and
same.
And he's a lovely guy as well. That means a lot to me. But Dean Ambrose, very much a star. So I think he's great as well. I'm also very happy to see the fans and WWE like take to Dean Ambrose in the main event. Like a new top baby face who isn't Cena. Like,
do you not think this is only until...
The
other lads are back? Listen,
we'll talk about that at the end of the match.
Grand.
Like a lot is riding on him. Like WWE, they're not in the business of making new top line baby faces.
They haven't done that since 2002.
They're in the rely on Cena until he's dead business. And WWE, they've made three top line baby faces since Cena came around, and they've been burnt three times. You know, Jeff Hardy, 2009, he outsold Cena's merchandise for three months. 2009. And then they had to fire him whenever they found out that his house is going to be raided for meth and he's going to be arrested.
Yeah.
Then CM Punk spent ages him and Hom, and they finally made him a main event babyface, and then night after Royal Rumble 2014, fuck it, I'm sick of it, I'm out of here. And they're left holding the really.
Yeah.
And through no fault of his own, they fought against it for so long, but they actually accepted Daniel Bryan as the main event babyface in the future.
Did they though?
Yeah, main event WrestleMania.
But
super win.
But after Mania, he went to the mid-card against Kane.
The problem is, well, he had a concussion. And then his dad died and he took some time
off.
That's
true.
And then he needed shoulder surgery and neck surgery.
If he makes it back, not sure, he's having a lot of trouble with his arm and nerve.
Yeah, his rehab isn't going well.
Weakness, and he's losing muscle mass and all that stuff. If he comes back, he has to drastically change his wrestling style. No more drop kicks off the top rope. No more flying headbutts, no more suicide dives through the ropes. If he takes out those three moves, I think he can make his career last years longer. But man, the damage he's done in the last year alone. That fucking double dropkick off the top rope, it's one of the stupidest moves you can do in wrestling. It's so stupid.
I'd agree. So the main point is this is the fourth main event babyface that WWE are making. So... Or have made, so I'm need him to succeed. WWE need him to succeed.
Please,
we need him to succeed.
Someone. Yeah.
I'm very happy. I think he's an incredible talent. Like, his character is 24/7. You get the feeling he's always in it, so he's just like that. It's very rare in wrestling. Of course, he's very much like Heath Ledger's Joker as well. It's like, people ask me where I'm from, I say I was raised by a pack of wolves. He's a cool dude. As you said there, he can successfully pull off shit writing and angles and make it halfway decent.
Yeah.
Like with the hot dog cart. And,
yeah. He can't pull off everything, but he can turn shit into gold.
And like, backstage, watching See No Evil 2 and to get ready for Kane.
What was that all about?
Like, that's awful stuff. But, you know, Titty Master, he's the fucking man.
Titty Master.
He can pull off almost anything. Yeah, just less comedy shit. Like, remember Seth Rollins, and there's the insinuated he's got a vibrator in his Money in the Bank briefcase.
Yeah.
Cut that shit out.
Like. Yeah. Trying to make these guys your new guy, your top two guys, top heel, top face, and one gets taxis and gets on the fucking subway for hot dogs, and the other one brings a vibrator around in his briefcase. Come on. You tell me that you couldn't have done that joke with Heath Slater, like.
So kick off the match. Dean Ambrose comes out looking like Casey Jones or his kendo stick holder. You like that? He unpacks weapons in the ring, mostly chairs, and in an awesome move, he scales the cell. So the match starts from the top.
I was kind of shocked at that. I thought the Fed were done with that, especially since they changed from the old cell and got the really tall one.
Yeah, it's like about four foot taller,
it's,
I guess.
It's huge, yeah. So I was like, oh, okay, this is pretty cool.
He's not the quickest getting up that.
No. He's not that sprightly.
Yeah. Rollins demands the authorities' hired goons, JJ Security, Joey Mercury and JB Noble, go to bring Ambrose down. They get beaten up, so Rollins scales the cell. Oh, in under 10 seconds, he, like a whipper with a bum full of dynamite.
You can just tell that he's like a proper athlete, isn't he?
Brian Alvarez calls him Captain CrossFit.
Nice.
Seth drops the kendo stick from the top of the cell to emphasise its height, but the camera's in too tight, so it falls out of view almost instantly. Should have done like a wide shot, or you could actually have the camera on the bottom looking up at him and he could drop it, you know?
Yeah.
They cordially start going down the side of the cell and take a double Sean Hell in a Cell 97 spot, each falling through an announce table.
I thought that was shite.
Yeah.
I thought it was like telegraphed and they just spent too long doing it. Rollins actually bumped well, but Ambrose, you could see, kind of looked and waited and then jumped. It was like, oh, come on, guys. I just wish you didn't do that as opposed to doing it badly.
They sell for over 4 minutes, getting wheeled off on gurneys until Dean's Hulkameter is full and starts brawling again. Just like Hell in a Cell 97, they finally get into the cell and the bell rings a full 15 minutes after Dean's music first hit.
A bit long.
Dean gets the heat, JBL throws out an actual wrestling booking trope, which is, be careful what you bring, you might have to go through it yourself. Which is generally what happens, you set up a table, you go through the table.
Yeah.
And that's what happens, Rollins props up a table between the ring and the cell, and gets elbow dropped through it. Corporate Kane pops in with a fire extinguisher to turn the tide, and Seth running powerbomb throws Ambrose through the table that he set up.
That was really nice.
They wail on each other with chairs, referencing Seth's heel turn wailing on Ambrose and Reigns with a chair. And when Ambrose sets up a curb stomp on two cinder blocks, the lights turn out. You can just see the live sign remains, so it's intentional, like the feed is fine. Don't worry about it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A voice starts speaking in tongue, and after a few lines, you recognise it's Bray Wyatt's voice. The fans all know it's Wyatt, they all have their cell phone lights on. The lights turn back on. Well, it's a lantern in the middle of the ring as smoke bellows up from the middle of the ring. And a spectre appears in the smoke.
The Emperor.
Princess Leia.
Yeah, help me, Obi-Wan. You're my only hope.
Well, yeah, a hologram. And Bray charges through the smoke and attacks Ambrose. Hitting a standing Uranagi, he kneels as a trepidatious Rollins slithers on Ambrose and gets the three. Afterwards, Bray hits a Sister Abigail on Ambrose and poses, and we're out.
Has now covered Dean Ambrose, and Seth Rollins has beaten Dean Ambrose. Sister Abigail.
Man, I didn't enjoy the main event at all. I was really looking forward to it. I was hoping they were going to have a long singles match in a cell with a couple of nasty spots and a good story and a good finish so that you can go on and build. And with the exception of the few spots, we got practically zero of what I wanted. I thought the build was bad. The start of the match, it was cool for the first couple of minutes, but it went on for way too long. I didn't think the match really had a story. It was literally just, you put up the table, I'll put you through it, and then we'll do this chair spot, and then this table spot, and then we'll go to the finish. I hated the finish. I thought it made no sense. Why would Bray Wyatt interfere in this match? Makes no sense. There was no build to it. There was no reason for it. This feud, we haven't gotten that match yet. You know, I know that they had the one match,
the Lumberjack
match, but I didn't think that was great. Like, this match is crying out for a singles match just to end the feud, and they won't give it to us. I was like, it was all right.
Like, the 15-minute opening part of the match, far too long, and it was over half of the match. The rest of it was 13:54. The meat of the contest I actually enjoyed, and that progressed quickly enough. The Wyatt spot is really hokey, but I love that hokey shit.
It looked cool.
I know, it was awesome.
It looked cool.
If someone pitched that to me, I'd book it straight away.
But it doesn't make any sense. The only way you can make it make sense is that Wyatt is now working with Triple H, but that makes no sense.
Well, he's not, right?
Cause so then it's just stupid.
Well, he's just after Dean Ambrose.
But why? What has Ambrose done on him, and what has he got to gain from it?
Well, I'll find out on Raw, that's what. very Hell in a Cell 97 supernatural finish that Kane debuted in that one as well. And chicken shit heel, Shawn Michaels won. But yeah, as you mentioned, the worst part is that Ambrose and Rollins is not finished. He still hasn't gotten his retribution for the heel turn on him.
But it feels like the feud is over.
Yeah, he's moved on to feuding with Bray now. Seth turned heel June 2nd, 9 after Payback. It's been 5 months since then. They were both in the Money in the Bank ladder match. Seth won it. Had a big schmoz at Battleground. Seth won the Lumberjack match at SummerSlam. Big schmoz at Night of Champions. And Seth wins tonight, thanks to Bray at Hell in a Cell. So, the feud doesn't really end unless the face wins or kills the babyface. Jared Test versus Triple H.
Oh, God.
Over Stephanie.
It's your boy, no.
Fucking kick pedigree, pin, and get out. You feud with the Mean Street Posse.
Yeah.
You could have had Seth lose clean if you had a match of the year candidate, because they both look strong.
Yeah.
The match fell well short of that and my expectations. This pay-per-view hinged on this match being good. And it wasn't. Well, no, it was fine.
It was okay. No, it was good. You couldn't call it bad.
But these two having a proper singles match would be a fucking belter.
I've been giving out about it since the show where they were meant to have a match and it didn't happen. It's 4 or 5 months ago. Been teased and dicked around. The WWE don't give a shit. They don't give a flying fuck what fans want. Because you'll watch what we want you to watch.
You'd hope that Rollins and Ambrose, since this is their first real main event, so it is the biggest match of their career, that
absolutely
they would have the match of the year. We deserve to be perennial main eventers level match, but this wasn't anywhere near that. It was just a good match, which is a huge disappointment.
I was underwhelmed thoroughly.
Yeah, and so pay-per-view overall?
It was average, a 5.5, 6, whatever.
Yeah. Let's check out what happened on Raw.
You are now tuned in to the world's greatest. see my champion, John Cena, take on that stinky beast, Brock Lesnar, and win back his WWE title, Jack. But we gotta agree, to see this wave of pink all over the arena tonight makes us all realize that Coleman Mania is running wild, right here in San Antonio, Texas, brother.
Give me anybody.
It's like Nolan Ryan or Earl Campbell in Texas. Boat.
So Raw 27th October 2014. OOC's Nexus boy Skip Sheffield, aka Ryback, returned to Raw, steamrolling Bo Dallas. No sign of Curtis Axel, which is only a good thing.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
So I reckon he's gonna be part of Cena's team.
Yeah, fine.
Orton flips out, blaming Seth Rollins for losing at Hell in a Cell, and drops Rollins with an RKO, kicking off Randy's big face turn. A main event babyface turn. Fuck off, Ambrose. Back to the mid card. He's driving to the mid card.
Yeah.
Orton's like, I'll calm down when he's dead. It was actually his best promo in like 7 years.
He cut a promo on Raw last week that wasn't bad either. So that's like two decent promos in a row. And if I give anyone guff over their promos, it's Randy Orton.
Elsewhere, Cena insults Lesnar for being an absentee champion, which is code for Lesnar won't be around until 2015. Stephanie announces a traditional 5-on-5 elimination tag match between The Authority and Cena and four Cena mates at next month's Survivor Series.
Oh, God.
As you know, every Cena mate has enjoyed mega success after being paired with Cena.
Especially Zack Ryder.
Yes, and Evan Bourne.
Oh, God, you remember, is he still with the company or is he gone?
No, he should can't.
Really?
Yeah.
He's so talented.
And who could forget Crime Time?
Most people.
Ambrose versus Cesaro never started, as on the video screen, Bray Wyatt explained his Hell in a Cell run-in was because every time I look at you, I see myself looking back. Run, Dean, run.
Rabble, rabble, rabble.
It was quite underwhelming.
Another guy that I feel really bad for. He's like on the Dean Ambrose level. Like, he gets given the dirt worst of shit and he does his best, but it's still doing a great reading of fucking tripe. It can only get so good when you're working with shit. Like,
yeah, like his delivery and character and look is awesome, but
all great.
His dialogue, what he's actually saying, is garbage.
Yep.
So, yeah. Anyway, it's early on in the feud to see where it goes.
Yeah.
And in the main event, we got Cena versus Rollins. So despite Cena losing the contract on the pole match, he got the number one contendership and a match with Seth Rollins. Nice one. After 22 minutes, we get the same old fuck finish that we do every week. Kane running and DQ. Cheers. Ziggler and the Raw locker room make the save. Look at all of these potential Hogan mates.
Also, this is them out campaigning to get on Cena's team, is it?
When has Cena ever run out to help any of you guys? And all of you lads, none of the Authority never do anything with you lads. Like,
yeah. I would argue that the only time Cena has ever made a save is if he's wrestling against another babyface and he's getting beaten up. So he might run out to save his opponent to, you know, keep his match fair. He wouldn't run out just to help you. You know, like, should you remember when he fucking robbed Zack Ryder's
bird
and left him to get battered as well? I still wouldn't turn heel. Oh my God.
Oh God. So Raw is, what was it, like 3:15, 3:20? 3 hours isn't enough time? Oh my God. So yeah, the best thing about Raw is bloody Orton, and God help us if he's the best thing on Raw.
Jesus Christ, yeah.
Yeah, so that was Raw and Hell in a Cell.
That was a long Hell in a Cell review, and fuck you, Raw.
Awesome. So, yeah, we'll catch you next time for our next OSW review, whatever it may be, and possibly some more Metal Gear and film and game reviews. So, it's a goodbye from Steve.
Take a boo.
And myself, Jay Hunter. And remember,
what you gonna do when Hulk Hogan buries you right here in Texas? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A winner is you.